I enjoy a nice glass of wine, but I don't pretend to be an expert in wine. I usually just want a wine that's high quality, delicious, and not too expensive. And to me, that's Bogle Family Vineyards. And here's the thing about Bogle. This is a third generation family-owned winery from California that makes exceptional wines for about 10 bucks a bottle. Bogle wines consistently earn Best Buy designations and high ratings from wine enthusiasts. And let me tell you something. The folks at Wine Enthusiast, they drink a lot of wine. They drink a lot of fancy, expensive wine. And yet they still keep giving great ratings to Bogle. And Bogle Vineyards has so many different kinds of wine. Whatever your mood, whatever you're eating, there's a wine for you. They got this great Pinot Grigio that's crisp and fruity, goes well with spicy foods, with fish. They have a classic Chardonnay that's balanced, amazing with a pork tenderloin or butter chicken. I like to take that Chardonnay and do what Jacques Pepin taught me, a couple of ice cubes in your glass of Bogle. If Jacques Pepin says it's okay, then it's okay. And there's the Bogle Pinot Noir, refined and elegant with bright fruit and about as food-friendly as a red wine can be. You're not going to believe it's only $10. Neither will your friends if you tell them. So pick up a few bottles of Bogle wherever you buy your favorite wines. Please drink responsibly.
I wish that I could still eat anything. I feel like it's not good to have an allergy in the end. It's an extra worry that you shouldn't have to think about.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. Today, we're bringing you the story of a friend of mine, Amy Pearl.
Okay.
Is your mic on?
Yeah. This is making me nervous. Maybe I should get my EpiPen.
Are you allergic to radio greatness?
Not that I know of. I haven't been really exposed to it yet. Anyway, let's go.
Amy and I used to work together at WNYC, New York Public Radio, and she had this really strange story that she wanted to share. We collaborated with our friends at the excellent podcast Radio Lab to tell this story. That's why you'll hear Radio Lab's Robert Krulwich and Latif Nasser a little later on. Anyway, let's get right to Amy's story.
Years ago, before any of this happened to you, just tell me, what was your relationship with meat?
My relationship with meat?
Yeah.
Well, you know how when you're little and your mom is like, you can have any special dinner for your birthday. My dinner was meatballs. And she was like, except meatballs, they're so hard to make. So it was pot roast. And then Peter Luger's.
Famous steakhouse in Brooklyn.
Yeah. I used to go there quite often and I live there and I have a Peter Luger credit card. So
are those hard to get?
I don't know how they give them out, but nobody seems to have one. I don't think they give them out anymore. But I mean, I was very into Peter Luger. I was living in Williamsburg, and it opened at like 1 o'clock every day, and you could just walk in at one. They had an amazing bar. There's no tablecloths on the table. These old German waiters, they bring out your porterhouse for three. They put a little plate upside down and then put the big platter on top of it so it's tilted and all the juice runs to the end. And then they like have this special double spoon thing that they somehow like scoop juice onto your steak. And oh, so good. And also like the smell of burning fat from a hamburger.
What about hot dogs?
Oh my God, I love hot dogs so much. When you bite into them and they're like clack and have like a snap. And like having a weenie roast out in the open air is just, it's like the, oh God, it's so good. Anyway, I was always very into meat.
What changed?
Oh my God, it was terrible. I was having this beautiful, it was springtime. I was having a beautiful leg of lamb with some neighbors and we like put it on the grill and it was just a delicious, beautiful dinner. And I had served with it some ramps that I foraged in my mom's yard. So we had this delicious meal and then, you know, I went home and I was going to sleep at like midnight, like a few hours later, and I just felt weird. I was like, God, something's wrong. I feel like really anxious, like something's wrong with me. And I went in the bathroom and I like look in the mirror and my face was like all weird looking. And I was like, I kept laying down and be like, I'll just sleep it off, whatever it is. But every time I lay down, I felt like I was going to faint. So I was like, prop myself up. And I was like, oh God, I was having terrible like stomach cramps and just like a weird feeling of impending doom, you know, but just like anybody, I'm just like, just get a good night's sleep. This will pass. I like splash a little water on my face. I mean, I don't know what made me think this, but I thought like maybe a tiny snail was on one of the ramps that I ate and it was like poisoning me somehow. You know, snails, I mean, they're probably poisonous. So I called my friends in the morning. I was like, hey, how you guys doing? How was dinner? And they were like, oh, so great. And I was like, really? So great? Nothing weird? Like,
no horrific panic attacks?
And they were like, oh, that was so lovely. Thank you so much. Let's do it again. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wow, I really had a rough night. But I didn't think anything of it. And I went on with my life, you know, just like, whatever. And then about a week or two later, I made some cheeseburgers. And I ate a cheeseburger, and I was watching Goodbye, Mr. Chips, really tear-jerking movie, and a good book, too. And about a couple of hours after I ate, I was, like, started to feel really weird. Again, I was, like, feeling like I was, like, had to stand up. I was, like, I think I'm going to faint. I feel really lightheaded. I can't catch my breath. I feel, like, really woozy. But if any time I lay down, I really felt like I was going to faint. So I was like trying to stay sitting upright. And I was like, oh my God, this is very similar. I ran into the bathroom and I was like looking in the mirror. And lo and behold, I had hives all over my stomach. And then they started coming out of my hands. And I was like, oh my God, something's happening. And at one point I did get up and unlock my door because I did feel like I'm going to pass out, call an ambulance, and then they're not going to be able to get in. So, I mean, I was in a little bit afraid of what was happening. And when I woke up in the morning, the first thing I did was Google sudden meat allergy, because I was like, this seems like an allergy. And the only thing that was the same was meat. And I'm going through, and like the second thing that came up was this article that was like, Florida man has sudden meat allergy. I was like, oh my God, I think, is it possible I could have this? And so I made an appointment with my doctor. I brought in the article. I'm like, I'm going to be this person, but I can do it. And I had the article in my pocket.
What person?
You know, the person who goes to their doctor with something I found on the internet. So I brought the article. It was in my pocket. And like, I got through the whole like checkup and I was too chicken. I went, when I was paying the receptionist, I pulled it out and gave it to the receptionist. And I was like, could you give this to the doctor? So that was like the best I could do. And then I did call my doctor and had a conversation with him on the phone, asking him if I could get tested. And he was like, no, there's no such thing as a meat allergy, blah, blah, blah.
This is where our friends Robert Krulwich and Latif Nasser from Radiolab come in.
So some people think allergies are just like in your head.
Yeah.
This is science writer Peter Smith. We got in touch with him after we heard Amy's story because Peter is an investigator of many things, including strange allergies.
And people are like, mushrooms hurt them, or they think
Wi-Fi hurts them.
Yeah, Wi-Fi hurts them. And I don't know.
And when our producer Latif Nasser and I got into the studio and we told him about Amy's story, he said,
yeah, all right,
I know exactly who you need to talk to.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Thomas Platts Mills.
This is Thomas Platts Mills. That's right.
How are you?
I'm very well.
Dr. Platts Mills is down at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. He's a professor and he works at an allergy clinic.
In an allergy clinic, we are constantly sifting through stories which not only you don't believe, but are actually nonsense. Simply.
And he told us in the last 10 years or so, he started hearing lots of stories just like Amy's.
Right.
Somebody shows up at the office convinced that they're allergic all of a sudden for no apparent reason to red meat.
The first time I heard it was probably as early as 2004.
And every single time he heard the story, he would tell the patient exactly what Amy's doctor told her.
No.
No way.
No.
It's not possible.
Right.
So what was wrong with these complaints, you know, in an orthodox medical way?
Oh, everything.
Everything.
Adults don't become allergic to something they've eaten for 40 years out of the blue, and certainly not red meat.
So you're basically saying to these patients, I think you must be making this up, because I can't explain.
Well, I don't use language like that. I say they're there.
I was trying to give you your inner voice.
There. Oh, you don't want to know what doctors are thinking in their inner voices. You know, you often think in the middle of an interview, is it possible that he's got, you know, some ghastly disease?
Mad cow.
Yeah, you know.
The point is that when he'd hear a story like Amy's, he just
didn't believe it.
But then everything changed. Thanks, oddly enough, to a cancer drug.
This new cancer drug called cetuximab.
In New York today, Martha Stewart was indicted on criminal charges relating to...
This is the very drug that got Martha Stewart in all that trouble for insider trading.
Remember that? I went to jail for 6 months?
Yeah. Anyway, very promising, exciting new drug. But then
doctors were giving people this injection and they would just like end up on the floor of the doctor's office.
In shock?
Yeah, they would be in anaphylactic shock.
Their hearts would start beating faster. They'd get short of breath. They'd get stomach cramps. Their immune system would start to overreact to something new and alien that came in with the drug. Basically a classic allergic reaction.
So the mystery lands on Thomas Platts Mills' desk.
Yes. So we were asked to look at cetuximab
to see if they could figure out what was causing the reaction.
And he tests two groups of blood, a control sample, and then people that have this allergy.
And he quickly zeroed in on a particular molecule, a sugar, that was part of the drug.
This sugar, galactose alpha-1-3 galactose, or alpha-gal.
Alpha-gal?
Yeah.
As in a particularly great lady?
Yeah.
Better than the beta or gamma gal?
It's like alpha male, but alpha female didn't quite have a ring to it.
So they went for alpha-gal.
The alpha-gal.
Anyway, it seemed like alpha-gal was the culprit.
Yeah, and if you'd told me 4 years earlier that there's a whole lot of people out there who are allergic to this sugar, I'd have thought you were smoking, you know, vaping again.
Because not only does this sugar alpha-gal show up in the cancer drug, and this is where we get back to Amy, it also shows up in the blood of mammals.
All non-primate mammals.
So every time you eat
lamb
or
beef, goat, camel,
even
tripe
or
pig's kidneys,
you're also eating alpha-gal.
So I'm reading this article and it says like it's this thing called alpha galactase or alpha gal or whatever.
So it made no sense that someone like Amy, who'd been eating meat all her life, would suddenly somehow be allergic to alpha gal.
I just was like, this was so stupid.
So one day,
it's getting to be barbecue season. I usually have like a couple of barbecues where I just do a whole pork butt and a brisket and like hang out all day doing it. And I was like very wanted to do that. And I was like, I'm just going to not eat meat and not even know. So I was like, forget it. My doctor will test me. I'm going to test myself. So I was like going to be very careful. I got a thing of Benadryl. And I was like, I'm not going to do it alone. I'll do it with my mom, my poor mom. And so I went up to my mom's and she's like really into food too. So she was like, oh, this is so exciting. I got 2 porterhouse steaks on sale at Stew's.
Wait, did you explain to her what you were testing?
Yeah, I did because I had talked a little bit about it with her. So like fire up the grill, do the porterhouse. I even think I like Instagrammed it as a joke like, ha, ha, ha. This might be the last time you hear from me. But so, you know, we're having a nice summer day, just me and my mom having our steak. I only ate like a couple of bites because I was slightly nervous. And I was like sitting in the grass with my dog and reading a book and trying to think like, do I feel normal? Which, try it, folks. It's hard to figure out when you start asking yourself, do I feel normal? Does this, am I breathing? Is my stomach hurt? Is something wrong? And I was like, after a while, I was like, ugh, I feel pretty good. And the neighbor came over and was like chatting with us. And it was in the middle of that conversation where I was like, I kind of feel like I have to go to the bathroom, but maybe I just have to go to the bathroom. So I went to the bathroom and I was sitting there and I was like, oh God, something feels bad. And then I was like, oh God, I definitely, this is not right. Something's wrong. And I went in to get the Benadryl and I took the Benadryl and I went on my bed and in the guest room at my mom's and I was like sitting on there and I was like, I just don't feel right. Oh, maybe I just take a deep breath. I'll just stand up. Maybe I'll just put my hands over my head like this. Oh, that does feel slightly better, I think. And then I was finally like, I think we should go to the hospital. And I went outside. I was like, Mom, I think you have to drive me to the hospital. She was like talking to her neighbor like, what? Oh my God, honey, what? Oh, let me go change my clothes. Change my clothes. Like, Mom, you know, she's not wearing the hospital level clothes. So I'm like, okay, hurry up, Mom. Mom, are you ready, Mom? And then I was like, while she was changing her clothes, I suddenly was like, oh my God, got my wallet out and my cell phone. And I like threw it towards my mom's bedroom door. And I was like, here's my insurance card. Call an ambulance. And I just like hit the floor.
Whoa.
Eventually, the ambulance arrives and I got stabilized. I was strapped to the thing. I was in the emergency room like they were shooting me full of, I don't know what, epinephrine and adrenaline. And the little, like, 12-year-old emergency room doctor runs in and he was like, I looked it up on the internet. AlphaGal, fascinating. What? That's terrible. I've never heard of that. Could it be true? Yes, it's true. Like, they're all having this discussion there. Then when I went back to my doctor after that, and I was like, hey, just get out of the emergency room because they tested me for AlphaGal and I'm allergic to meat.
So this is an allergy.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden you're looking at the, quote, crazies, and they're not so, quote, crazy anymore.
Absolutely. We suddenly had a blood test. And of course, what turned out is all these patients who'd been telling us this story were allergic to AlphaGal.
But it's still like a mystery.
Right. There are patients.
Thomas Platts Mills couldn't figure out why people like Amy, who had lived for 40 years eating porterhouse steaks at Peter Luger's with a credit card, why would she suddenly develop an allergy now? There got to be some kind of trigger.
Yes. So we were looking for anything that could explain it.
It could be a mold. It could be a nematode.
A worm. Or a fungus.
But then he looked again and noticed that all the people who had had bad reactions to the cancer drug,
they were in a particular area of the country. It was Virginia, North Carolina, Southern Missouri,
Tennessee,
Arkansas. No cases in Salt Lake City, no cases in Denver.
Just smatterings down the west.
So he turned to his technician, Jake, and he said,
I said, you've got to Google every map you can find and say, what matches that area?
Creatures or diseases that appear wherever the allergy appears. So Jake starts Googling. And eventually he comes across a map that
matches where the cases are very beautifully. The maximum area for Rocky Mountain spotted fever.
So he made this little map and it's like the shaded dark areas of the country are places with Rocky Mountain spotted fever. And then there's like some stars where, you know, this allergy had appeared.
Yeah.
And they overlap.
Ah, very interesting.
And then all of a sudden, it clicks. Rocky Mountain spotted fever is a tick-borne disease.
This is the distribution of the Lone Star tick.
And actually, just a little before this, it turns out an allergist down in Australia, Cheryl Van Noonan.
First name Cheryl, S-H-E-R-Y-L, Van Noonan, V-A-N, and then N-U-N-E-N. And I'm from the Tick-Induced Allergies Research and Awareness Center in Sydney, Australia.
She says she was now being visited by all kinds of people who claimed suddenly to be allergic to meat.
And whenever I take a history, so for example, I'd ask them, was there a family history of rhinitis, eczema, asthma, stinging insect allergy? And they say they've all been bitten by ticks.
When we started asking patients, we suddenly heard the stories just out the kazoo.
But at this point, Dr. Platts-Mills, all he has is a map, some stories, and a hunch.
Right.
So what does he do?
He decides, well, maybe I'll just do this to myself.
He does what?
He decides to test it on himself.
Oh, my God.
He sort of, like, denies that he did it intentionally.
I know I had no intention.
I mean, I think he also likes to walk and amble and think about things.
Right.
So he goes for a long walk along the Blue Ridge Mountains.
And I knew I wanted to be off trail because I'm actually rather allergic to humans.
So he's walking and walking and walking. And along the way, he bumps into a whole bunch of ticks.
And if you walk into a nest of those things.
Oh, my God. This sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, absolutely. I got 200 seed ticks.
Oh, boy.
And then in November of that year, I was taken out to dinner. And the lamb chops were particularly delicious. And the French wine was delicious. And 6 hours later, I woke up covered in hives.
He's got an allergy to red meat.
All just because of a
tick bite.
Tick bite.
That's right.
Coming up, more of Amy's story and the tick story. Then Amy goes back to the doctor a year after her first diagnosis to find out if she's still allergic. Stick around.
And now, a delicious word from our sponsors.
Mm. Norwegian Cruise Line breaks the boundaries of global cruise travel. When you cruise with NCL, you're going to get award-winning specialty restaurants, a variety of food and beverage offerings, immersive entertainment, and the most thrilling experiences at sea. It is first class. These ships have all kinds of specialty restaurants: Brazilian steakhouse, French, Spanish, Italian, Japanese, Mexican. Select ships also feature al fresco dining on the waterfront and Ocean Boulevard, an oceanside promenade lined with bars and restaurants. Norwegian provides guests with truly authentic and fresh dining and bar experiences complemented by exceptional service. Almost everything you'll eat is prepared from scratch by highly experienced chefs. And they got whatever you're going to be in the mood for. You want a quick casual family meal? They've got that. You want a beautiful four-course feast? They've got that too. And you can sip something delicious at one of up to 23 unique bar and lounge options per ship. Visit and explore exciting destinations around the world and enjoy unique experiences on board. With no set dining and entertainment times and no formal dress codes, you have the flexibility to design your ideal vacation. Book your next adventure at ncl.com. Whether you're a family vacation traveler, a business tripper, or a long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. They've got over 7,000 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. And you will get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. I especially love those Cambria Hotels. They have locally inspired hotel bars with all kinds of specialty cocktails, downtown locations right in the center of all the action. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces. That way, if you're a business traveler, you'll be able to get all your work done. On-site restaurants, fantastic. And then at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles and great pools for the whole family and spacious rooms. I mean, if you have kids, you understand the importance of the pool. If you stay at a hotel with a pool, almost nothing else matters. Fortunately, all the Choice Hotels take care of all the other stuff too, but I mean, a pool is a great start. Whatever kind of vacation you're going on, whatever kind of travel you're doing, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. I continue to get a lot of flack for my PB&J technique, okay? Jelly on the top, jelly on the bottom, peanut butter in the middle. That's the way to go. And the first thing people say is, well, when you spread the jelly on both sides and then spread the peanut butter on top, you're going to tear the bread. And my answer to you is, use better bread. Like Hero Bread. You get that whole wheat Hero Bread. It's got some grain. It's got some heft. It's got some flavor. It's got some texture. And it will stand up to my excellent PB&J technique. Hero makes delicious breads that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, but plenty of protein and fiber. The soft, fluffy experience you love when enjoying a refreshing BLT, a savory breakfast burrito, or a mouthwatering cheeseburger, you can have all that with Hero Breads. And let me tell you, we are a big burrito-eating family in our house. Breakfast burritos happen multiple times a week, and these Hero Flour Tortillas are perfect for it. Don't give up being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co, that's hero.co, and use code Sporkful at checkout for that discount. That's code Sporkful at hero.co. I just got a very wonderful shipment of goodies from the folks at Reese's. And let me tell you something. These people remain the absolute worldwide leaders in bringing together chocolate and peanut butter. Of course, we know that peanut butter cups remain transcendent. But have you tried the Reese's Sticks? They're wafers with peanut butter in between each wafer, all coated in chocolate. I mean, the combination of sweet chocolate and salty peanut butter just brings people joy, and the folks at Reese's do it better than anyone. So shop Reese's Peanut Butter Cups now at a store near you, found wherever candy is sold. Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. In last week's show, I talked with Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman, hosts of the podcast Movie Therapy. We talk about some of the best ways food is used in movies, but also some of the worst.
One of my pet peeves is the beautiful woman. She essentially is a supermodel. She's either Cameron Diaz or Sandra Bullock, and she's so beautiful. But guess what? She's clumsy and she eats too much. She's just like one of the guys, but she still weighs only 110 pounds. Check her out.
In this show, we also take your calls. A couple of you call in with your life problems, and Kristen and Rafer prescribe movies that will help. And you may also know Kristen from her other podcast, By the Book. Anyway, that one's up now. Check it out. Okay, let's get back to my friend Amy Pearl and her story. Like before, you're going to hear Radiolab's Robert Krulwich and Latif Nasser taking the lead in some parts. When we left off, Amy had just discovered that her allergy to meat comes from a tick bite.
A tick bite? Hang on a second. Because, like, a few weeks before all this started happening, as I said, I was foraging for ramps in my mom's backyard, and I had a tick on my arm.
Now, it turns out that not only was that tick bite a terrible thing for Amy, it was a kind of double tragedy.
Hidden from view amongst the trees and in the undergrowth.
And I think it's only right at this point to back up.
Is a fascinating world of wonders.
And consider the story from the tick's point of view.
Okay, so I'm Graham Hickling. I'm a wildlife disease ecologist at the University of Tennessee.
So I was wondering if you could help us tell the story of, in this case, the Lone Star tick that bit Amy.
Oh, yeah, sure. So they start off in this little pile of eggs, perhaps a mass of 2,000 eggs, under the leaves.
The proud mom who just gave birth.
At that point, she's just a kind of a withered husk.
Meaning dead. But anyway.
A few weeks later, those eggs will hatch and this mass of 2,000 baby ticks emerge from under the leaves.
And could I see them with my naked eye?
If you ran into a mass of them all up together, you would feel like you've got a little smudge of dirt and then the dirt starts walking. And so they'll just climb up and they'll, you know, potentially all be on the same leaf or the same twig looking for something to feed on.
Now, one teeny little tiny problem for these teeny little tiny ticks
is that they dry out.
So when they come up from under the leaves, they come up
briefly,
and then they go back down, get a little water, come back up, get thirsty, go back down,
and rehydrate.
So they like commute.
Exactly. And we refer to the behavior as questing.
Oh, questing.
So if you were one of these little baby ticks up questing for food,
while you're up there, you are essentially Velcro.
Because on each one of your little legs,
you have little kind of hook-like structures. And so you're flat against the leaf.
Sort of sniffing in the air with your two little front legs.
That can detect CO2 heat movement.
So let's say one day you're sitting there on your leaf and you pick up the scent of a nearby mouse.
Mice are the potato chips of the ecosystem. Everything eats them.
Which means you might be about to have your very first meal. So you
basically stand up,
stretch out all your little legs,
and do a tick dance. And so it's kind of interpretive dance-like movements.
While you're waiting for that mouse to come just close enough that you can grab onto it. So you're dancing and you're waiting, and you're dancing and you're waiting, and you're dancing and you're waiting, and you're dancing and you're waiting.
To be honest, you are probably going to wait your entire life and die unfulfilled because there are 2,000 of you starting off and a stable tick population. There's only going to be two of you that survive.
Oh, my gosh. So 1,998 little baby ticks are born.
And then that's it for them.
But let's say that you're one of the lucky ones. And one sunny day, there you are hanging out on your little leaf when you detect two incoming mammals. One is a 40-year-old hominid. The other is her dog. So you perk up, you thrust your legs out.
Wave, do the tick dance.
And say that you're waving and you're dancing and you're hoping and you're waving and you're dancing and you're hoping and you're waving and you're dancing and you're hoping. And slowly the dog's getting closer and closer and closer. And you reach out with one of your tiny little limbs so you can grab on. And eat and survive. But
the reason that tick ended up on me was I slept in bed with my dog naked. I mean, she's always naked, but I was also naked. I mean, that's not gross. Does that sound weird?
No. But how do you know that's when it happened?
Because I know that, like, I did a good tick check on myself and I took a shower and everything. And then in the middle of the night, I woke up with a itching sensation and I went to the bathroom and I couldn't really see what was on, like something was on the back of my arm and it was a tick.
So as the tick is biting into Amy, what is it giving Amy that's going to make her allergic to meat?
Well, I need to stop you there, Robert.
Difficult one, Robert.
I don't know the answer to that.
That's Peter Smith, and
well,
rejoining us is Cheryl Van Noonan, the scientist.
It's all up for speculation.
We don't really know, but here's the theory. So
normally, when you eat a piece of meat, you put alpha-gal in your stomach, and your stomach digests it, and it's in your body, and it's no big deal.
But the tick cunningly
will drill into you, poke into you,
and injects
its saliva.
We'll call that tick spit.
Tick spit? into its victims?
Straight into its victim's largest organ.
The skin.
And ticks, but it has an anti-clotting factor, an anesthetic, anti-inflammatory compounds.
And
we think
the alpha-gal.
Now, Peter says the thing about the skin is...
The skin is like this enormous, like, surveillance system.
It's always on the lookout for invaders. So when the alpha-gal comes through your skin, covered by all that bad, bad tick spit stuff...
That's going to really, like, set off your immune system.
The immune system freaks out.
Like, oh.
And the alpha-gal, covered now in bad spit, almost sort of...
By mistake.
...gets labeled bad. And now it's on the bad guy watch list. So...
Therefore...
The next time you eat meat...
The meat comes in.
And then...
The body unleashes wave upon wave upon wave of chemical attacks.
To do battle against this alpha-gal.
And this reaction gets way out of hand. You got so many antibodies multiplying, making you, rather in this case, Amy, feel just horrible.
Right.
I mean, it's very weird. It sounds like a science fiction movie. It sounds like... the beginning of a science fiction, at least kids' book. Let's not go to movie, but like, it's just strange.
Which all goes to say that this really is a kind of double tragedy for Amy and her tick.
Yeah, because ticks didn't evolve to bite humans.
Right. We're a mistake.
Like, we have opposable thumbs.
We're either going to pull them off.
I actually woke my mom up and she helped get it off.
Or if they drop off, they're going to drop off in an airport terminal or a Walmart car park or somewhere like
or
that.
Or a shag carpet.
Or a shag carpet indoors and they're doomed.
And for us, well, we lose something that historically anyway is a big part of who we are.
Yeah. Because we adapted in the grand evolutionary scheme of things to like eat flesh, to eat meat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm actually sitting here picturing a steak, but actually the thing, I mean, hot dogs like wrap ramps around a weenie and roast. Yum, that sounds so good. My mouth's watering. Weenies and ramps.
Yeah.
But I am going to my allergist tomorrow because I did, you know, I was reading about this allergy a lot when I first got it. And I read that for some people, the allergy can fade away. So I'm going to get a blood test to see what my blood level of alpha-gal is. So I'm a little...
So what are you hoping for tomorrow?
I want to be normal. Again.
That was the end of the Dan and Amy conversation. She was going to go to the doctor, get herself tested, find out whatever. So we asked her back in.
Okay.
To find out what happened.
So I actually did get an appointment with my allergist, Dr. Korn. Mm-hmm. Her name is Dr. Korn. She's really nice. So I got the appointment. I got the blood draw, whatever. And a few days later, my doctor called me and she... said that my numbers were still really high. And I was like, well, how high are they? And she was like, 3. And I was like, 3? That's not high. And she's like, they're supposed to be like 1 or something. So they had gone down, but they were still, you know, many times more than they should be. So,
but when you left and you were waiting for the call, were you waiting with the hope that that you would soon be eating a bit of hot dog?
I mean, honestly, I was hoping no.
No?
No. I don't.
Wait a second. You are the great, you.
No, but I was afraid that she would be like, oh my God, your numbers are so low. I think you could probably eat meat. Let's do a food challenge. I would be like, ah, because like, that's such a scary memory. Yeah, I don't, you know, actually just the other night I was eating at an Indian place and I was eating vegetarian, but like, I felt something and I pulled it out and in the dim light of an Indian restaurant, I was like, was this bacon? And I suddenly, you know, like you just get this drop in your stomach and I'm like, what time is it? 4 hours from now, if I, you know, because it's, there's something about it being delayed that makes it so difficult. It just is like.
Like a suspense movie with you.
It's like, it could happen in the next 3 hours or maybe not. I don't know. I mean, honestly, the only thing that. The real reason I want to be able to eat meat is so that I will be prepared to eat it in case of emergency. I mean, I went on a canoe trip in the Adirondacks, and I was like, well, what happens if I get stranded out here? And like, what if I have to hunt, but I can't even eat meat? I would have to hunt fish. But then when the lake freezes over, what would I eat? I can't survive. Something's wrong with me. I feel evolutionarily challenged. This is what I think about before I go to bed every night. Would I be able to survive if I had just what's on me right now? A pen, underwear, my dog. And so, yeah, I mean, that's a real issue, is like, it's not a real issue. Obviously, it's never going to happen. I live in Brooklyn. But I do, for some reason, I always think, like, I want to be prepared in case. But, yeah, you know, I don't think I would go back to eating meat necessarily.
Like, you are still more frightened than game, so to speak.
Well, also, like, I wish I could be a vegetarian for ethical reasons, because it's not so much just the eating meat, but just like, you know, the factory farming and that kind of stuff. So I feel like morally superior now. I can be like, well, I don't eat red meat. Of course, I'm forced to not eat it, but at the same time, I would, if I had the willpower, I'd probably go that way anyway. And then also, I think it's great. It's like we're all evolving to be on this planet, which is getting harder to be on. And we know that meat takes a lot of resources. And like, now I'm not doing that. So like, the tick is helping me evolve into a better human being.
Like, so one could, instead of thinking of the tick as your teeny weeny irritating enemy, you could think of it as a guiding light, making the world safer to share with your fellow earthlings.
Yeah.
So you may have lost your relationship with meat, but at least you have your moral superiority.
Yeah, I mean, I am superior. Yeah.
So that was Amy and Me with Robert Krulwich and Latif Nasser from Radiolab. As you heard, Amy got tested to see if she was still allergic to meat. And even though her alpha-gal number had come down a lot, it was still too high. She was still positive for the allergy. But a year later, Amy decided to go back and try again. Just one hitch. Since that last test, she had gotten bitten by another tick. The research shows that could make her allergy worse. But as she headed to the doctor, she was still hopeful.
I guess I feel like the numbers went down so much. And it's not like I would go back to eating meat, but I do want to know so that I won't be worried. I don't want to worry. Worrying is such a burden. It's like praying for something bad to happen all the time. Anyway. So no, I don't want to go to... I love Dr. Korn, though, but I don't want to go. I hate the doctor.
But you're going.
Yeah, I'm going right now. It took me so hard to get this appointment.
You're like forcing yourself to do something you don't want to do.
Yes, Dan, that's being an adult. You'll get there eventually. No, did you read, there is a great recipe in the Times for steak tartare, and it was like rustic steak tartare, and I like the image that brings up of like a raw egg on a bunch of raw meat sitting outside somewhere in the south of France.
like in a forest?
Yeah.
Lots of ticks just, around?
Yes. So I would love to be able to be like, oh, I want to express who I am by eating steak tartare. But maybe that in itself is just a pathetic way to look at eating, which is really just fueling. But that's not true. I mean,
I don't think it's a pathetic way to look at eating, but I do wonder whether that's really who you are now.
Am I steak tartare or am I kabocha steamed with brown rice? I don't know.
All right, Amy. Good luck at your doctor's appointment.
Thanks, Dan. Bye.
A few days later, Amy got a voicemail from her doctor with the results. We went into the studio together so I could hear it.
I hope it's either conclusively lower or conclusively higher.
Why would you want it to be conclusively higher?
Because I wanted clarity. It's responding to the fact that I got bitten by a tick and going up. That means it's a real thing that's like scientific and not some kind of space age, weird, spiritual issue that's making me not eat meat. Like sometimes it just feels like, why is this happening to me?
Right.
So if it actually responds to science, then I feel like, oh, it's science.
It feels like there's an order to things.
Yes. order is important.
You got the results. Before we play them, just remind us what your numbers were. Like, after your first huge incident when you were rushed to the hospital and almost died, what was your alpha-gal number?
Oh, I think after the first incident, my number was like in the 40s or something.
Okay. And then last year, a year ago, you had it tested. And what was it?
3.1.
What is normal? Like, how low would it have to be for you to be able to go back to eating meat?
I think 0.3.
So you, at your worst, you were in the 40s. You got down to 3-something. But to be able to eat meat again, you have to get down to 0.3.
Yeah.
All right. Can I play the voicemail?
Okay.
It's Dr. Korn, just calling to let you know that the alpha-gal actually came back at 11. So it's still positive. That's the bottom line. And I wouldn't worry about the fact that it went up. The bottom line is it's still positive, and that's what we are really looking for, if it's positive or negative. Okay. I will actually put it in the mail and send it to you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that result, Amy?
Actually, you know, in terms of like chaos and order, I thought it was good because it definitely went way up. And so I feel like fine. I don't have to think like, oh, it's slightly lower. Maybe I should try a food challenge. Oh, maybe it will. I just feel like I couldn't go for a year without getting exposed to a tick. So I'm not going to get my hopes up again. And I feel like, I mean, scientifically speaking, in my obsessive reading about this, I did read that if you are re-exposed, it's much less likely that it will ever fade away. So I kind of feel like I lost that window.
But Amy, one option for you would be, you could say, I'm not going to go to the outdoors, I'm not going to go camping, I'm not going to go into tall grass for 5 years, and I'm going to see if the number goes down, and then I'll be able to eat hot dogs and steaks at Peter Luger again.
I mean, I don't know. I love being outside. I would never, it'd be terrible. Like, I don't want to think that I would never stop going out.
Do you remember the first time it hit you that you might never be able to eat another steak in your life?
I had this favorite really nice roasting pan. I used to make pot roast in it all the time. I do remember the time when I was like, you know what? I'm going to store this on top of the fridge now. When I retired that pot, I was like, wow, never going to really use this pot again.
That, my friends, is the one and only Amy Pearl. She's a producer at WNYC, New York Public Radio. Lately, she's been producing a series called Good Things for WNYC's Morning Edition. Her podcast, 10 Things That Scare Me, ended last year, but you should definitely check it out. Vulture called it a smartly designed, bite-sized window into the soul. We'll have a link to it at sporkful.com. One other update. Since we worked with Radiolab on this story, Robert Krulwich retired from the show. Best of luck, Robert. Latif Nasser took over as the show's co-host. He's also got a great show on Netflix called Connected that was just nominated for 2 Emmys. Congrats, Latif. Check out Connected on Netflix. Next week on the show, we are back to talking pasta. Remember, in our Mission Impossible series, we played some clips from the live event that started it all, which was called the Bucatini Dialogues, a debate about pasta shapes. Next week, we're going to share much more from that raucous, fateful evening. All stuff you have not heard before. My pasta fairy godmother, Evan Kleinman, and Francis Lamb from The Splendid Table join me live on stage to argue with each other and me. It's a really fun one. Get psyched. While you wait, check out last week's episode. We're talking food and movies with Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman, hosts of the podcast Movie Therapy. If you're looking for suggestions for fun food films, check this one out. Thanks. This episode was originally produced by me, along with Ann Sani, Shoshana Gold, and Dan Charles. Emma Morgenstern and Andres O'Hara put together this new version of the episode, and it was mixed by Jared O'Connell. Music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher. Our executive producers are Peter Clowney and Daisy Rosario. Thanks to Robert Krulwich, Soren Wheeler, Jamie York, Latif Nasser, Ariane Wack, and all our friends at Radiolab. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Ari Strauss from Washington, D.C.
And I'm Christina from London, England.
And I'm Randall Cooper of Nashville, Tennessee, reminding you to eat more,
eat better.
And eat more better.